Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for joining me. I'm glad you're here. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you did that. And if you've been listening already, as you know, we consider that a sign of a high intelligence. And you're going to be glad you did because our good friend Tom Markle is with us. Tom's a longtime member of our Brain Trust, one of the smartest guys I know when it comes to managing and acquiring precious capital we have and that precious capital that we still need to get our hands on. He is the founder and the visionary and the CEO behind iBank.com and our good friend Tom Markle. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good to have you back, as always. Hey, Tom, these are unsettling times for small business owners, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, Jim. It's I think, you know, we tell our people I've been through this now four times since 1970, I think, when I got in business, and maybe even five times. I don't remember that far back yet, but I do know one thing. What goes down must come back. And, you know, in the last cycle, the dot-bomb in the 2001-2002 time, you know, everybody was doom and gloom back then, and it took a smarter group of people and a different type of technology and Web 2.0, and look at where we are today. And now we're launching all new technologies kind of in the next Web 3.0 environment. But I think it's time to buckle down, you know, tighten up the hatches, and be smart about how you spend money and acquire capital.
You know, Tom, I've been around a long time in terms of recessions, at least. And my first one that I experienced that I was impacted by was in 1969.
Really?
And, I was in college, and I actually wrote a paper about it. But as I was writing the paper, I got laid off. I was working my way through college, and I got laid off. That wasn't a good thing for me. So as a 19-year-old, I got hit between the eyes with what a recession can do for you. And I've been in all the ones since then. And so I think I'm qualified to say, though, Tom, that the one thing about this one that's different from all the others I've been involved in is the collapse of the credit part of the marketplace.
Right.
The things that I've been involved in, Tom, if whenever the consumer and the businesses were ready to come back to the marketplace and borrow money and leverage capital to make something happen, the credit markets were sitting right there, healthy and ready to go. That's not the case right now, is it?
Well, you're right, Jim. It is a bit different. Although I would submit to you that really what we've done is we've gone back to pre-1997 underwriting criteria. You know, when you look back just 10 years ago and you think about how you went as a small business to receive capital, you really needed three payment resources, and most of all, you needed a multiple to cash versus how much income you were generating, and two is a coverage of assets to the loan you were to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And so this lately, we've been spoiled by fog of mirror, and you get money. And just tell the people that what your income is, and that's called, you know, stated documentation, or actually low doc, no doc. And I think we've been spoiled by these credit criteria. And now the people who we're seeing, you know, as you know, we're processing about $15 billion a month in small business loans for nearly 10,000 small businesses each month. And our network of lenders, which is about, I'd say now, somewhere over 1,200, you know, from Louis the lender to kind of Wells Fargo and everybody in between, we're seeing the standard old day underwriting criteria. How much cash do you generate on a monthly basis that, you know, will pay your debt service? And what is your coverage of assets to outstanding debt? So what was, you know, 1.1 or 1.2 to 1 is now 2 to 1 or 3 to 1 even in asset coverage. And the same thing really goes on the cash flow side, too.
Well, you know, I remember watching this credit, these credit standards collapse over the last 5 or 6 years, especially. It's especially done so over the last half a dozen years. And I'm not going to say what's happened here because that coming, I didn't know how pervasive it was in the marketplace, but I do remember saying a couple of years ago, hey, you know what? We've had 200 years of building credit practices, credit standards that we know work. Why have we abandoned those? I remember saying that to myself and to other people. Why have we abandoned this? This can't be a good thing. Hold on to that thought. Tom Marker's gonna have some good ideas for us once we come back after these messages on how you can make sure that you do what I've been saying. Win by surviving. Stay with us, Intel. We're back at 17 on Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz and jimsblog.biz. That's the mothership, the knowledge base, and the blog. But if you go to smallbusinessadvocate.com, that's the mothership, you can find the blog and the knowledge base all right there in one place, and just link around to them and take advantage of them, use them to your advantage. And you can find a link to our Tom Markle on his place on our website and on our Brain Trust links, and also his website is right there as well. Tom is our good friend, and as I said, the founder and the CEO of iBank, and that's iBank.com. Tom, before we went to the break, I thought it was important for me to remind people that I told you that I got laid off in the '69 recession. Well, that was on a Thursday, and so on a Friday, I went back to I got up and I put my suit on, and I went down to Sears, and I knew two people at Sears who were managers at Sears, division managers, and I called them. I went by and I said, "Are they hiring here?" And they said, "Oh no, we don't have any business. Don't you know there's a recession going on? But nobody's hiring. We have no opportunity here at all." So I went back to the office, and I filled out an application. And they call you, and I said, "Who do I talk to?" She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I want to talk to somebody about a job." She said, "Oh, well, just a minute." So I sat down, and about 15 minutes, the assistant manager came, and he called me in his office. He said, "What can I do for you?" I said, "I'm looking for a job." He said, "What can you do?" I said, "What do you need to have done?" He said, "What have you been doing?" I said, "I've been selling and I've been delivering furniture." He said, "You think you can sell tires?" I said, "Yes, sir." And guess what? When I got out of there, I had a job selling tires the day after I got out. Now, here's the point of saying all that. Just because one customer turns you down, just because one bank turns you down, doesn't mean that the next person you talk to won't say yes.
Oh, I agree, Jim. You really got to remake yourself today.
Talk to us about your thoughts on that.
Well, I think remaking yourself in this environment, when you have so many people laid off from the financial markets, the auto industry, the airline industry, there's virtually no industry today that has not been hit with some sort of major layoffs. And I think that you, as you just did in 1969, Jim, you got very creative about how you go about finding work. And those who are going to find the work are going to be putting their head down and pushing forward. My dad used to say the world's full of desire with no ambition. And, you know, I think today the guy that knocks on the door the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth time for that opportunity is probably going to get the work, and being very creative about how to get that work, not kind of thinking about the pride of yesteryear. I know I've been out of a job twice in my life, Jim. It took me about 6 months. The longer I was out, the more pride I got.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was worth more than I was when I was out of a job, and it just got worse and worse and worse, instead of just saying, "Hey, wait a minute, the market's changing. the values of wages are changing. How do I change with that and maybe get two jobs instead of one?
Right. Isn't that, though, I mean, see, that's what you guys do with your at iBank. When people use your services, you know, just because one financial organization says no doesn't mean the other one will. Another one, that they all will. I mean, that's what you do. You maximize their possibilities, don't you?
Absolutely, Jim. I mean, you know, I gave a speech at the USC entrepreneur graduating class here last year, and I said, if you're looking for money, bring your computer. Look under every rock and bring your computer. Forget the shovel stuff anymore, which is driving around in your car and wasting gasoline and trying to find the right banker. It'll do your deal. Get on the computer, search for the keyword, search for a local keyword, search for an industrial-type keyword. So if you're an agricultural business loan or agricultural equipment leasing, or if you're a doctor, type in these words in the major search engines and virtually go everywhere to find money. And as I say, we're processing about 10,000 small businesses a month looking for about $15 billion. And there are many other opportunities out there. We're not the panacea of all panaceas. We're just one of those opportunities. But, you know, we know some of the facts. For instance, 61% of people are turned down because of a poor loan application, not because of credit or not because of collateral, just because it was a poor app. And so, you know, our engine helps them step by step, drive them and make a smart package. We know that the average small business goes to 4 banks before they're approved, and that was the old days, and now it's probably more like 8 to 10 banks before you're approved. But that goes back to your old adage, knock, knock, knock. You know, keep knocking on those doors and
gotta
keep
kiss a lot of
away.
Toes. You gotta kiss a lot of toes before you're gonna get a prince or a princess, depending depending on which one you prefer. But no, that's exactly right. And so folks, if you're in your own local, if you're in your hometown, you know, this is one of the reasons why, Tom, I keep telling people, you can't have an unbanking relationship to be successful. I think you got to have one. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're getting I would provide financiers with like for equipment, I would use different funding entities. And for my building, I'd use a different entity. And for my working capital, I'd use a different entity. But I'd go to find as many relationships as you can. Because you just never know that, you know, bankers are changing their appetite like they change their socks.
Right. And if you can lease, or finance a truck through one of the car companies, which you can do a lot of that right now, then that's better than borrowing that money from your bank. It frees up that quantity of money that your bank can still loan you. Hold on to that thought, Tom. We got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Tom Markle. I want to ask Tom when we come back about his thoughts on how to deal with vendors. People that you owe money, they pay them. We're going to talk about that after these messages. Tim Till, they will. Reverend Al Green brings it back, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm so tired of being alone. I'm so tired of falling.
Back.
Won't you help me?
7 Till, I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and busy with Markle and, he's forgotten more about how to acquire capital than most of us will ever know, ladies and gentlemen. He's the founder and CEO of iBank. That's the letter I, BANK.com. I encourage you to check it out. In fact, as you may know, if you've been on my website, you know that's one of the sites that I recommend. Whatever Tom does is high quality, and I encourage you to go there and see what he has available. Tom, not only can you help them find money, but you also help them prepare their loan applications and automate that and everything, right?
Yes. We do, Jim.
I was going to ask you, Tom, about talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on dealing with our own accounts payable when we don't have enough money.
This is a real passion for me right now, and I think we have a lot of this under our resource center. If you'd like to learn more, or just email me at tmarkel@ibank.com. I'm really kind of trying to create a kind of a business moral and ethics for executives on how to make good decisions in these tough times. You know, we can be many of us can be really kind of stupid when it comes to the good times and walk on people on the way up. But boy, on the way down, we disappear into corners and we don't tell the truth. And some of these things are not really good for our business and the community. And what I'm trying to encourage people to do is one, just treat people the way you'd want to be treated, rule number one, for your vendors and your employees. A guy told me once, he says, you know, if you have a house on fire in your neighborhood, everybody sees the fire, and people come with care packages and food, and they come with buckets of water, and they help you, you know, help you with your life. And we as business executives, we most of the time fail to let our, we let our pride, right, the wall of pride rise above our better judgment, and that is to say, look, I have my business, and it's on fire. One, do your people know? Two, do your vendors know that it's on fire so that they can help you bring a bucket of water to help cause, you know, slow down the fire of your business? And I think the biggest thing we can do for our vendors and our employees is share our issues with them so they can help us turn around our business. And, of course, the bigger the fire, the more broader help you need.
Right. So what do you when you go to your vendors, if you got before you get 90 days behind, right? Before you get into trouble with them, what do you do? What do you say?
Well, since I've been through four of these already, and I've really learned this, from my dad, and that was to just sit down with your vendors, either on the phone or invite them over, show them your financial situation, share with them, you know, what's going on in the business, and ask them for their advice, ask them to give you some help. And we do this. We sit down with our employees. We've got, you know, we like everybody else have suffered in the revenue side. But I said to my employees, we can either let each one of you go individually, or we can sit down all together and try to solve this problem together by being very creative, doing some part-time work, dropping your pay. Some guys going on all commission. But you know what? I threw it up to everybody and said, I need your help. Here's where I am. Here's how much money we have left. How do we help everybody grow and thrive and make their house payments and buy their gifts during Christmas and so on? And you can't believe how much people will come to your rescue when you just tell them the truth and tell them where you are, Jim.
Well, another thing to remember with these vendors is if you bought from them before, you're probably going to need to buy from them again, or you can't sell anything.
That's exactly right.
So
they're going to help you turn around.
It's not just a matter that you owe them money, but if they cut you off, you got a problem. So you can't wait till you get upside down with these people to let them know you got a problem, can you?
No, you can't. You can't shock them. You really got to tell people early that you kind of sense something's going on. And again, I think the old adage, treat people the way you want to be treated yourself. Would you like someone to tell you 90 days later that you couldn't, you know, that you can't pay your bills?
Another thing that I've been saying with the vendor you got here. When things get tough, there's going to be a call made with your bank. So who's going to make that call? Are you going to make it, or are you going to wait till the banker makes it? My point is, if you wait till your banker calls you, you got more trouble than you might be able to deal with. Make sure you make the phone call.
Absolutely. Jim, you, since 1969, you've seen these meltdowns. And if you just if you're just being able to sit down with people, kind of give them where you're at, ask them for their help, ask them for their advice. There'll be some people that, you know, are saying, you pay me by Friday, or I'm foreclosing on you or whatever. But, my experience is 99% of all of your vendors and your employees will actually come with very good ideas that you actually never thought of.
Absolutely. Hey, Tom, I got to wrap it up. Thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
We'll see you next time. iBank.com, ladies and gentlemen. Check it out. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blass, Small Business Advocate, signing off from New York City.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.